All right, g'day guys. Welcome to Climbing the Agile Testing Ladder. Today we are going to walk you through a whole series of features in 2013. Many of these features already exist today in 2012 in a more primitive fashion. I guess if I think about the goal of this session, the overarching goal I would love is that we walk out of here and we can increase the maturity of our teams. Increasing the maturity of the team, to me, is working closely with testers. And we've been doing this now since 2010 to a degree. Okay, we've had Microsoft Test Manager for a while. And what we really want to get to is not to have testers in a different discipline. We want to have them so you're not throwing a bug over to testers. Testers testing it, giving you a tick, and putting it in production. You want them to be in the team somehow, working together. And we're going to walk through the tools and hopefully avoid some of the waterfall practices that we have developed over probably 30 years of software development. I guess I like the idea that we will think about some way of automating as much as we can and reducing all the manual testing that a tester does. How many just devs are in the room? Just devs. Oh, I think that's 80%. I did not expect that. How many just testers are in the room?
One.
Just one. You passed the test, young lady. What is your name?
Libby.
So Libby is in the right place. That's all right. We will be very kind to her. We never say anything bad about testers. We love testers. You know, sometimes they can be painful. This session is for you, Libby, okay? All right. So how many people here would class them as a dev and a tester? They do both. Okay, so we've got about 40% of the room. Okay, maybe 50. All right, so how many people are already on Visual Studio 2013? They're using those tools at work. Anyone? Just three, okay. How many people are on the 2012 set, the updates? Yeah, 2012, all right, so we've got most of you, 75. How many people are on 2012 RTM? Nope. How many are on 2010 and earlier? Lots. Can I see a show of hands on 2010? Wow. All right. So that means a lot of people. That was 40 or 50%. So that means a lot of people are on both. Anyone on earlier, 2008? Okay. These tools won't be available to you in any shape because we didn't have anything in those days. We really got into earnest in 2010. Now, I just want to start off. Yesterday, we talked all about the developers, and basically talking about product owners. And we aren't going to be doing that. In fact, I gave you a poster that we did, the 8 steps to Scrum. I've just given most of you a new one. If you've got a sharp eye, you will see there's been some changes based on feedback we got yesterday. They're very small, but some people get upset. Today, can I just show what I'll be giving you at the end? If you can just bring that rule up. So we're going to be talking through a different life cycle. And this is just the life cycle of just the PBI. We don't care about a product owner in this case. And you can pick these up at the end. So just throw that down. All right. So, yeah, you can find that. All right, so let's move along. How do I move this along? All right, so let me talk through the history. The history, in 1990, we were building Xyz and we were shipping them. The feedback we got back then was basically via emails. In 2000, the industry first got automated QA, okay, called Test Complete. Anyone use it? No one? All right. Show of hands, who's using it or used it? Okay, so a few. Okay, that was the first big one. Still pretty good. Then we got HP in the picture, and then we got IBM in the picture. And these guys were making big inroads and they were creating a big market. Anyone use the IBM tools? Just a few. Okay. All right. Not many. So Microsoft came along in 2005, a few years late, and as usual, the first version was pretty ordinary. And then came along 2006, big developments in the market. HP acquires Mercury for $4.5 billion. So it's a lot of money for for a fairly new market. And it was a pretty fat active X control. It wasn't particularly nice. 2007, SmartBear acquires Automated QA, and then Visual Studio released 2008 with what you might call minor changes. We do have some seats at the front, guys, for all you. If you guys could probably move along to the side, because there's lots of people just standing. If you've got a spare spot, just move along.
Just squeeze in, you'll make friends.
Yep. No testers are welcome in this session. If you're a tester, we're only allowing one. All right. Just do a bit of refactoring here. Things should be quite... We always fit in. All right, good. So 2008 came along, and that allowed you, rather than record the entire thing, you could, you know, just take what you needed. It had Fiddler integration. This company came around called Art of Test, and I'll tell you why I found this company. It's kind of an unknown company, but at the time, we were now, you know, Google Maps had come out. There's a bit of a mandate inside our company that we had to do lots more interaction in the web. And back then, we wrote JavaScript. We didn't have jQuery. And there was lots of bugs in an area, which was the UI in JavaScript, essentially. This, since the web test from Microsoft only recorded the HTTP traffic, you couldn't find JavaScript problems. And that was a pain in the ass. So I found this little tool. And then this little tool was acquired by Telerik. And that is what some of you use today. How many people use that tool, the Telerik stuff? Okay. So, you know, maybe 15%. Then Microsoft came out with a really good version, 2010. And this was the first time that Brian Harry from the TFS team had tried to marry devs and testers together. This was pretty exciting for all Microsoft devs, because now we had something that wasn't a separate tool, it was integrating with us, and we could work together as devs and testers. All right, then Microsoft, for the first time, moved into the Gartner Magic Quadrant, okay? This matters to big companies, where you sit in this magic quadrant. There's four quadrants, and you want to be in the top right. 2012, Telerik released some load and performance stuff, and then 2012, Microsoft released exploratory testing. Okay, some UI improvements. Not enough, if you ask me. It should be much nicer. It should have a ribbon, but I digress. I'm not sure what the team that produces this UI... thankfully, nobody else copies it, but it's ordinary. Anyway, 2013, we get lots of stuff, and you're going to see this today, where we've moved lots of stuff into the cloud, and Microsoft move into number three in the Gartner Magic Quadrant. That said, HP Quality Center is still number one. It is a really good tool. It does everything that a tester likes. It's still Visual Basic Script, and it's still expensive. And all these tools are expensive. I've just put a few here. It's very hard to get pricing, actually. You can Google all you want. It's fairly obscure. But you can see we're talking thousands. The Microsoft stuff is, in this case, the cheaper stuff, but it's not cheap tools. Now, I don't want you to think, even though, when you look at this, you've got HP as number one, and IBM is number two, that didn't stay for too long. That was back in 2009. Microsoft were nowhere to be seen. Once they released, I'll just fast forward to 2013 now, you will see that HP is number one, IBM is number two, and Microsoft is number three. I'm a big fan of best of breed tools. So even though in the software quality suite that Gartner release, and they say it's number three, I think you've got to be careful the way you look at this. Because I don't think you should look at testers in isolation. I think it's really important that you look at testers with the developers. In fact, if you ask me, developers are way more important than testers. Okay. So the way I look at this is you've got to also look at the ALM one. And in the ALM one, this is for devs, we are clearly number one at this point in time. So whatever you, whichever way you look at this for your own company, you've got to put them together. Don't make a decision on a tool set without thinking about the integration story, because that, to me, that's the most important. So when I look back at this one, the only tools I'm caring about, because I'm only going with the, you know, with TFS Source Control or, you know, the Visual Studio Suite. And the Visual Studio Suite only integrate at this point in time with SmartBear and Telerik down the bottom. So a lot of the others might be good tools, but if they don't integrate, I'm not interested personally. Anyway, you guys make your own calls on that. But so you join Microsoft, ALM and the other one together and you've got a good story. So the tools we're going to go through today is this thing and this web version. So they're the two main things we're going to talk about. I see most companies having a go at this, and there's lots of areas for improvement. A bit about us. We're from SSW, Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, and we mainly work with, you know, people on the Microsoft stack, MVC, SharePoint, CRM, that style of stuff. All right, a little about me. I am the chief architect there, and we are a gold partner. I'm an MVP in ALM, and I'm a scrum trainer. I spend most of my days going to different companies, working with teams, working with what they're doing, trying to give them suggestions to improve. Damo.
Yeah, and I am a solution architect. I'm also the Queensland state manager for all you guys who are around here. I'm the guy to talk to. Big fan of TFS Scrum as well, and I'm a web guy, so web dev. As you'll probably see as we go.
So we're back at Queensland, your hometown.
Yes.
I'm actually sick of coming to Queensland. We come here every year. Who wants to go somewhere else? Come on. Yeah. We love Gold Coast, but we're getting older. We don't want to come to this place anymore.
How many of you are stuck here?
Yeah, we'll go to Adelaide. Yes. Yeah. Is that where you want to go?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Who wants to go to Tasmania? Yeah. Come on. I've never been. I want to go. Put tech head down there. It's boring coming here. All right. We're not allowed the meter maids anymore. Things have really gone downhill. So we're going to be going through this cycle of what happens. And essentially, long story short, we want acceptance criteria. We want to test the acceptance criteria. We want to code. We want to increase our automation. And we want to ship small and often. That's the end game. All right. So here's the agenda. We're going to talk through what's agile testing, what's exploratory testing, what is UI testing, what is the test management side of things now in the browser. This is 2013 stuff. What do we do with those pesky stakeholders? How do we get stuff to them? How do we let them test stuff? And lab management, what's the story with there? We're scaling out our testing once we've increased automation. Is that good enough? Anything that you specifically want to get answered today? No? Come on, someone.
Release.
How we release software. Okay, good. We're not doing it. But good point. But I'll just answer your question so you can just know that answer. You've got a couple of... Microsoft have just bought something called InRelease that... If I were you, I would wait a little while before using it. Okay, we've had a go at that. It is not just quite ready. And Paul Stavell has that octopus thing. That is a nice release story. I would just hang on, okay? Hang on. So you can leave. Okay, all right. Any other questions? Yes?
BDD,
yes. Very important thing mentioned in that thing where that is another approach. We're not going to go into BDD. Sorry, you can go too. Okay, what else? Yes?
Load testing,
very important. That we'll be covering that. Okay. All right. Agile testing. Now, I just want to just remind you, Scrum says there's no sub-teams, the testers are in the team. Okay, important. It also says when you deliver an increment of software each sprint, it must be fully tested. You can't go through and say, we've just made our sprint. It's now in the testers' hands because we did our last check-ins last night. They're now testing it. You can do it, but you can't say you're doing Scrum, okay? It's not the idea. You do one PBI, you get it tested, you move on to the next one. You work together. All right, how many people are doing the proper Scrum way of dev and test, PBI by PBI? Okay, so, all right, so you got maybe 20% of you, okay? So you guys are doing well. The bottom line is we want individual interactions, working software, and collaboration all over a lot of these tools, okay? So use our advice with tools during the session judiciously. All right, make testing easy. Test each feature works. Don't worry about documentation. And as I said yesterday, don't do any work without acceptance criteria. Say no. All right. And try to give stakeholders feedback opportunities early and often. All right, I've got lots of stuff on this thing about rules to better acceptance tests. I'm not going to go through all that, but if you want to read about acceptance criteria, you'll get a few tips from there that you might be able to use. All right, different types of testing. I'll let you do that, Damon.
All right, so I'll let you guys start. What are different types of testing that you guys use in your projects, in your environments? Yes? Integration testing, good. Unit testing, coded UI. Build, what was the other? System exploratory. Oh, that's a good one. So usually we see unit testing, integration testing, coded UI testing. So integration being your codes, your coded tests that plug in a whole lot of different bits and make sure they work together. Coded UI to make sure your UI works and therefore everything underneath it works. You can use Selenium as well for that kind of thing, which we'll show you in a bit. And then there's performance tests, there's load tests, there's all sorts of stuff. It's difficult to kind of split it down into isolated topics though. You know, there's also smoke tests, and who knows the story behind smoke tests? How that came about? So that was, smoke testing came from the hardware industry. So they'd get all these bits and they'd plug them in and screw them together and solder them up and so on, and they plug it in, they flick a switch, and if there was no smoke, great, next test. So that's literally how it works. So if you're doing that with your code and causing smoke, maybe, yeah, a bit more work required. Anyway, so manual testing is the other one that we see a lot. Guys just going in, clicking around, yeah, that looks fine. But then there's organized manual testing, which is what most people kind of do. And this is where the testers will look at the requirements, they'll write down all their test cases, they do all that kind of stuff. This comes, or should come, from the acceptance criteria that Adam speaks about a lot and that we push. So every PBI should have acceptance criteria, and these lead to test cases. And then they ideally should go on to automated tests, which is what we're going to talk about as well. We see kind of a spread between this black box and white box testing. So black box testing being testing stuff that you don't understand. You know, you hit a page, you don't know what's going on underneath it, and you do some stuff and something comes out. That's great. So that's manual testing. On the other side of the fence, we've got coded tests, like unit tests, integration tests, where the developers know exactly what's going on under the covers, right? And in the middle, we've got organized manual testing that we spoke about, so all the test cases, and this ideal spot here, the automated testing, so nobody has to do any work anymore. So we see manual testing, most organizations we go into, it's about 70 to 80% of the time they're just doing manual testing. Yes, 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 this looks great. Organized manual testing, maybe a little bit less, 10 to 20% of people are doing this, creating test cases, doing that kind of stuff. And then on the other side of the fence, on the white box testing, we see maybe only 5 to 10% people writing tests. Everybody says they write tests, but nobody writes tests. Right. This automated testing bit, that's kind of the gold, silver bullet. That's, you write your test, and then from then on, it just runs. And it'll give a big flashing red light or whatever you have, fire a Nerf gun at the person who broke the build kind of stuff. What we usually see there is that's kind of just a pipe dream. Nobody's actually doing that. It's a bit of a stretch. Everybody wants to, but it's too hard. We need to get features out.
So just to just be clear on that, we do see some teams doing unit testing, you know, but of the, you know, the hundreds of teams you see, it's a very small percentage that are disciplined enough. And you do see the odd team, you know, doing automated testing. It's just a tiny percentage.
Yep. I'm not saying these are the numbers you should aim for, by the way. I'll make that clear. All right. So I think it's about time to introduce this professional testing tool. Who is using MTM in their environment again? That hands, yep, that was about 20%, I think. All right, so what do you think of it so far? Hands up if you love MTM, you think it's fantastic. That is no hands at all.
There's one
hand, excellent. All right.
I think MTM with lab manager together make a really good combination.
MTM with lab management. With lab management, great combination, yes.
Nothing beats that.
Nothing beats that. And if you're doing that, that's amazing. It's fantastic. So here's how we normally see people working with MTM, right? Step one, you create a test plan, right? Step two, you create a test suite for that test plan, and then you create tests for that test suite, which is in your test plan, and then test steps for the tests in the test suite in the test plan, and then you can run your tests, right? So there's a whole lot of work that you do before you get to any tests. And the big problem here is your developers are doing agile. They've got their rough idea of what the feature is, and they speak to the product owner on a daily basis and say, can you clarify this for me? Can you tell me exactly what you want out of this? And so their requirements shift in line with what the product owner actually wants. Meanwhile, the tester's looking at version 47.35b of the spec document, which is now 5 weeks old, and they're writing their test cases based on that. Who's familiar with that kind of thing? Yeah, quite a few hands. So that's what we see a lot of the time. It'd be great to drag the testers into this agile environment, and as Adam said, increase the maturity of your team. Stop throwing things over the fence and get everybody working together. So the solution to this is exploratory testing. So Adam,
yes.
Going to show us some exploratory testing?
I can.
You can. I'll switch to you.
All right, so the first thing I would do is I would be going to the backlog and having a look at where we are. And I can see in here we are looking at Sprint 3. And Sprint 3, we have these different PBIs and tasks. And I would look at this one and I would see, all right, what's the story here? Okay, so now I would go ahead and code, right? Wrong? Oh, thank you, sir. All right. So we'll put some acceptance criteria, what it's going to look like. All right, that was just a test. All right, you passed. So we'd do that. We would check all the code in. It would now be in a state ready for the testers. Now, it would be good if you could right-click here and go explore or do exploratory testing or something. Well, we don't have that integration. I have asked the team for it. That would be nice. But what we need to do is switch over to this tool. And this is Sprint 3. We'll come into here. We will see this. And you can right-click on this guy and you can go explore. Or you could be on the testing tab and having a look at it. And here we would see it. But this is the UI that a tester is using, but he is using the same things that the developer is seeing. That's the important part. So we'd click on Do Exploratory Testing. And this is the ones that I see using this. Click explore, right? Okay. So the guys that actually did this UI, I think they think UI means unusable interface. But you don't click this guy. You want to click this one and then click this. I know it's in the tool, but it doesn't even look like a button, does it? No wonder they miss it. So that should have a warning, don't use this, use this guy. So you come in here and then you open this guy up. And once this thing is open, once we click start, it is going to be recording everything you're doing. It's like a spy, okay? You know, some of us have got wives like that. So it's just anything you do is recording. So we click start and we start testing. We do what it says. Now, what do we need to do to start testing? What has got to be in our head? The acceptance. All right, so we now need to somehow open that up and find it, because I didn't even read it, sorry. I'm going to give you a hot tip, okay? You can actually see it from here. Can you see it?
You've got to click on the label.
Oh, you are good. You've got to click on the label. Not many people know that, okay? So, one person knew, but everybody else, isn't that fantastic? You know, so many people go back. Anyway, so it says here to do that. What? Is that ridiculous? Why would they actually make it like that? Anyway, all right, I won't complain. It's very good that you can actually get to it. All right, so we come in here, And I'm just going to open that up, and when I click on reports, I'm going to see stats. Fantastic. So I'm going to, my default browser is Chrome, because I generally use that. But when you're using this, you will have nicer descriptions if you're using IE. So more often than not, you go that route. So I'm just going to type explore, paste that URL. Hopefully that will be good. And we'll open that up. And you know it's recording. See that little timer down there? It's doing everything. And my goal now as a tester is to find bugs after I check the user experience work. So whatever I was meant to do, I can't remember. Click reports and see stats. Okay, good. Click reports. And I see stats somewhere. And I see there's an error here, right? I see there's an error there. I think I'm going to report that. So you click add screenshot. You can do that and puts it in. Woohoo! Great. I can see you're very excited. Now, we got the tester. Libby, wasn't it?
Yep.
Libby. I want to add an annotation onto this screenshot. I want to like put some comments or circle what I want you to read. How do I do that? How do I edit this thing?
Just type.
Just type? No, I want to, you know, circle something on the screenshot. Right click? No, right click. I don't have a pen. I can't. Oh, yeah, no, I very good. I can try. Yeah, that's almost working. No, I need one of those fancy computers. No, all right, I'll just tell you, because you just have to double click. I didn't know that. And it opens this paint, and now I can barely use this tool, but you can do things in here. If I want to put a circle on it, watch that. Look at that. Look how cool this tool is. Okay. All right, so you can do all that, and you come back here, and you save that. I actually use Snagit, so I actually find it fairly unintuitive. But anyway, you can do that, so that works quite well. Good. So then I want to, create a bug. I click create a bug. It does this, and you can see all these steps. All right? So this has done all the steps that I need. So then I click on, I'll give this a very good bug. Okay. I hate people that just do that. So I'll do buggy. How's that? That's better. So we'll click this thing. And now I can take off some of the steps that I don't want. So I will, I don't even know why it recorded that twice, so I don't need that. I only really need this bit down to this bit. All the rest I don't need. So I don't actually like the UI here, but it's okay. You can live with it. You select the ones you want and then you go select. What I prefer to do is delete, and just keep the ones I want. But anyway, it does the job, and now you've got these steps. Finally, you can come through here and you can save. But I guess my advice to you is you want to be careful in what test cases you want to create. But when you hit a bug, the ones you really get in trouble from your boss is when you do the same thing wrong. Like, you can usually get away with making mistakes with good explanations. Make the same mistake twice or three times, you're in big trouble. So let's just imagine, I just had to do a gig in New Zealand, and it was a team of eight guys, developers, eight devs, and a tester. The product owner's solution to all the dysfunction was fire the tester. That was serious. That was his suggestion. Because the tester wasn't listening to him. Like, he'd report a bug and the same one would reappear. So to get confidence, you want to make sure that that doesn't happen. The easiest way is to add a unit test or an automated test, but if you can't do that as a tester and your job's on the line, just make a test. And you'll see down here, it even encourages you in the UI. Save and create a test so that won't happen again. And when I do that, that goes ahead and it makes a test here. Test to check reports. Always work. That is the worst description ever, but you get the idea. All I wanted you to really see was all the steps are here, okay? And then we come down here, we press save and close, and we're in business. And we're back here, and you can see during this testing session at this point in time, I've got one bug I've logged, and I've created a test case as well, and that's part of the session that I'm doing. So, I think I've pretty much done the most part. Okay.
All right.
So, why do exploratory testing? Let me just quickly recap that one. Testers are smart, and if they're using a tool like this, they can spend less time creating manual tests and more time looking at user experience and things like that, rather than just going through. How do you force them to give good bug reports? In this way, they cannot do a bad bug report, really, because the worst thing that a tester doesn't do is give you the exact repro steps. So, okay, they often try to remember. The dev says, oh, well, it works on my machine. And go, well, then do these steps. And then the tester says, oh, it's fixed. What did you do? Well, I didn't do anything. You can't reproduce the thing. You know, and that's the cycle. And if you have that cycle, you've got to fix it. And that's the easiest way to fix that problem so it never appears. Okay, so use MTM exploratory testing. All right, so we've looked through acceptance criteria, testing one bug, finding a bug, capturing the repro steps, and creating a test case. Nice and simple, that bug should never happen again. So that's what we saw. We checked acceptance criteria. We create a... We do one test plan per sprint. That's kind of the way we do it. Other people do it different ways, but that works fairly well for us. Don't use that button. Use the explore work item and do one PBI at a time. You can right-click, choose that way, and then click that, and you will see where the acceptance criteria is. Great, and then there's just those steps, and you've got a nice, rich bug reporting, okay? All right, all that stuff's automatically populated. You obviously should put expected results. I will tell you in practice, we sometimes skip putting expected results. When you can't skip that step if you're talking about specific business rules. If you're talking about something in a doc that says, you know, you add up the GST, it's 10 times this, times 1.1, that stuff has to be an expected result. But, you know, going through this, you can kind of skip it sometimes. And you end up with that. All right, and that's what the end result will look like when you go back to the PBI, and you'll see the bugs that you've created, and that's a great screenshot. Bugger, thank you.
Yeah.
It's better than mine. All right, so moving along, just to remind you, this tool is awesome because it records everything you do. It's very similar to this Fitbit. That's my steps yesterday, and that records everything. Now, I've tried it. I've tried recording my steps, you know, in other ways, but I never remember all the things, okay? I have this Runkeeper app, and I turn it on, and then I turn it off when I finish walking, but I never remember. So that's why this tool is good. My daughter, she's only 10, she made this video on David Warren and the black box because she was so amazed that it was created in Australia. So she then, after getting that idea about the black box, she went and got a black box. What are the in-car black boxes called?
The dashboard cam.
Yeah, dashboard cam. So she got one of those put in my car. So, you know, because sometimes she doesn't like the way I drive. Because sometimes I have an iPad there. And, you know, you can, in Sydney traffic, you can do, you know, emails while you drive and talk on the phone. It's safe because you're only going slow, okay? But she wants to know if I ever do that. So she went and put one of these things in my car, all right? So she asked me to put this link here, so I put a little link. So if you want to vote on her petition, you can vote on her little petition. Okay, so what do you guys think of this exploratory testing? Who thinks that they will go back to their office and start using this all the time now? Because it's not for everyone, I want to know. Okay, all right, maybe 30%. Who wouldn't use this tool after seeing it? Okay, why, sir? Oh, you don't have to do it. Because he doesn't have anything to do with testing. Are you in the right place? Good. All right, that I didn't expect that one. What was the other reason? Yes, sir.
We use different technology, so not just Microsoft, Salesforce, development, other things.
Salesforce, but this could work with Salesforce's web UI.
You need to
Okay. All right. Okay. They're not. They are reasons, but then not the reasons I was expecting. All right. Okay. So it's awesome because it pretty much gives you a rich bug report. And it's a good way to at least get the testers giving consistent things rather than just emails all over the place. If you start doing that at this point in time, I will tell you that you will have 80% of, you'll have a level of maturity 80% above most teams, okay? How many people are already using this way today during each sprint? They're already doing it this way. They're using exploratory testing each way. All right, so you got maybe 5% of you guys, so not very many. My prediction is next year, when I ask you guys, we'll be having 50% of the room always using exploratory testing, and I'll tell you why as we go along. All right. So this is the next part of the puzzle. If you, and I've got the simplest possible example here, if you want to test entering one thing and checking one thing on a page, enter one thing, check one thing, then you now, if your testers are using that tool, you have a beautiful process, a bit of magic that comes from this point. That stuff that the tester did can create a coded UI test. Okay, now you can't use the exploratory testing. We're talking about the test case stuff now, but it's very similar technology. You then go and you add an assertion to the test, and you now have devs and tests working together. Now, if you follow this process, you are going to be increasing your automation, which saves time for the testers. And that's a good thing. Okay, if we can have the testers doing less stuff, that's good. But it increases the load on developers. It increases the load substantially. And that's a bad thing. So, I just want to tell you these steps quickly. But if the tester does what we just kind of demoed and use as MTM for that, the dev now picks this up. I should be a dev, shouldn't I?
Should be a dev.
Should I be a dev? All right, so I'm a dev now. Okay, it's cool, hey? So I'm a dev. I'm dreaming. And we come through here and we add a coded UI test. We then select, I want it from what was just recorded by the tester. Then you've got the worst UI in history, but you can find the test case. Then you find that and you have this code written for you. One line of beautiful code to check that what we entered in the browser is here. Now, so we've got our action done. What's the next step? The action's been done. What do we want to do now? Check the assert. So we want the assertion. How do we do the assertion? Well, we come in here and we generate code for the coded UI test. The coded UI test builder, you'll come through, you'll do this, you'll use this little, kind of target thing, and then you'll select this, and then you'll click this, and you'll click add assertion, and then when you've done that in the browser, you've got your second line. So you've got two lines, right? Magic, hey? Is this exciting? I can tell you're riveted. Okay. I just want to tell you that this is a little bit more than that. So we've got our action done and our assertion done. If you want to modify that, you come to this UI test file, you click on whichever one you want, which is in the stupid reverse order because you action then your assertion. But I actually reported this as a bug to the test team. I said, I want to change the order. And their response was, Adam, it's in alphabetical order. I already knew that. I want to change the order anyway. So if you want to look under the covers and see what happened there, this is some code under the covers. Now, I don't know if this is meant to be read by a human, but it's there. It actually, there's a little bit more to it than that. Okay, so there's all that code. 115 lines of code there. You can look under the covers and see. And that's not all. There's actually a bit more. I didn't show it all to you. Another 115 lines. Actually, there's a bit more. There is just a touch more. All up, it's 400 lines, just give or take two lines. All right? That is a lot of code for one action, hey? Pretty bad. Now, that can turn off some people if you want to look under the covers. So just to remind you, you are meant to use this UI. But I'm wanting to tell you the things for you to consider. There is a lot of stuff going on to make this magic work. So, anyway, how many people here like the idea of using coded UI tests? Wow, that is 80% of the room. I did not expect such a good response. How many people do not like it at all? Do not like the idea of the coded UI test? Sir, one guy. Why? Oh, he wants to use Telerik. Are you a Telerik stooge? No. Right, yeah. So his point is very valid. There is a Telerik suite that does the same thing and it looks at what's in TFS. It has nice, beautiful Visual Studio integration. It gives you, instead of that UI, you get a grid and it goes along like that. It's quite easy for a tester to use and you can have the automation. That is definitely a third-party product that works very nicely, and we use it quite a bit. But if it's another thing you've got to buy, all right? And so it's not available for all teams. Either way, this stuff works well that I just showed you with the coded UI tests. It's got getting everyone working together. It's saving the testers a lot of time. And the most awesome part of it, which has already been acknowledged, is it works beautiful with lab management, and you can have it smashed against any environment that you want, okay? And that is really cool. But it's very verbose. It's slower. If you compare the time between that and a Telerik test, there's a substantial number of seconds between them. They're brittle to maintain. And the whole thing can give you nightmares. If you've had a really painful ingrown toenail, okay. In fact, I won't go down that story. All right. All right, I might get myself in trouble. Now, you can get these coded UI tests right, okay? So I do want you to know that there are some guys out there that refactor what Microsoft Create and they use the framework, okay? That UI test that I showed you the GUI of the UI test, most of the pain and all that code can be got rid of, so you have very clean, readable code of what's happened, of entering one thing and seeing one thing. So you can refactor this Dutch guy. His name's Marcel de Vries. Vries? No, maybe. De Vries, sorry. Yeah, it's not. You wouldn't want to say virus. He is a super smart guy. He is from the Netherlands, and he has a beautiful blog post and video on how to refactor what I've just shown you, so it's, you know, crystal clean. You also have another approach where you can actually, rather than do all the GUI recording, if you care about the output, you can do a code-first approach using the coded UI framework. So, the web. You can do all this with the web and with Windows. For Windows, it's a perfect solution. For the web, we've got competitors. Selenium. Okay? How many people here are already playing or using Selenium? Good. 30% of you guys. That's good. So, all right. Selenium. I'll let you take over.
All right. This is code. I think I'm going to need a hat too, Adam.
Oh, will you? Okay.
I will. All right. So we're going to kind of repeat that test that we did. All right. This is a very loose on me.
You don't have as many brains.
Don't have as many brains, yes. All right, so we're going to do one thing. We're going to search for SSW. I'm going to use Bing. I'm a little bit annoyed with Google because they removed Reader. And
nobody used Reader.
I used Reader and I had to move everything to Feedly. So I'm annoyed. So I'm going to use Bing. So that's the reason.
He's going to punish himself.
All right, and I'm going to check one thing, right? So I'm going to check that SSW's website is in the top three search results. So first I need to add a reference to Selenium, and then I need to write all the code, and I promise it's going to be less than 400 lines of code, all right? I'm going to write it by hand, And for those who are in the session yesterday.
380.
380. No, it'll be less than that. Adam, if it was you, it would be more than 400 lines of code, I reckon.
Thanks.
Good.
Thank you.
All right. For those who were in the session yesterday, you'll be pleased to know that Adam is not doing this coding. All right. So we'll switch to me. I've already got my test method here. When searching for SSW, Bing shows SSW in first three search results. Nicely named method. So the first thing I'd have to do is add a reference to Selenium. Who's got ideas? How do I add a reference to Selenium? NuGet.
Good.
Good.
You didn't think NuGet straight away? That's naughty.
Yep. All right, so the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to add a reference to NuGet. So I'll right-click, manage NuGet packages. Everybody's done this before who's a developer, right? And I'm going to search for Selenium.
Is this a Microsoft thing?
Selenium is not a Microsoft thing. It's an open source, I believe, package. WebDriver, it's kind of intermingled. I'm not exactly sure how they organize themselves, but Selenium WebDriver is the thing that talks to browsers and tells them how to do stuff in code. So I've already got this installed to save me some time.
I have a prediction for you.
Yes.
That we will hear something from the Microsoft test team about Selenium. Now, I don't know anything other than I'm in a lot of meetings with them, and this topic of Selenium comes up a lot. They watch it closely, and I think they will probably one day come out with some type of integration that works with Selenium, okay, because they think it rocks.
All right, so I've put in some comments with my forward slashes, and I'm using the arrange act assert way of testing. That was a subtle jab. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to set up a browser. And we're going to say it's a new OpenQA.
Sarcasm is the lowest form of humour.
It is. It's the only one I'm good at, though. Chrome, and we're going to do a new Chrome driver, right? Now, the other thing you need to do with the Chrome driver is tell it where to find its little exe. So these are standalone exes. You can throw them anywhere, and it'll talk to Chrome. You don't need one for Firefox. You do for IE. So just a little thing to be aware of. So we've got our browser. We are going to do another little thing here to manage the timeouts, because a lot of these sites use Ajax and things like that. So the elements you're looking for aren't always going to be there. So span.fromseconds, and we'll wait 5 seconds. This is a really good little tool for managing that. So if you're looking for an element, it'll wait 5 seconds to find it if it doesn't find it already. Right, now we need to do our act. So we need to navigate, go to URL. Oops. So we're going to go to Bing, as I promised. And we need to find the search box in Bing. Live coding, these ones always go really well and smoothly. This is going to work on F5, by the way.
I'll take over if it doesn't work.
Oh, gosh. Interesting story. When Adam asks us to do anything, usually he'll say, oh, we're going to write this function for this app that we're doing. If we argue with it, say, we know we don't need this, he'll go, fine, I'll write it myself, and then a developer will pick it up and say, no, we'll do it. So that's how Adam gets most of his work done.
Ouch. I need some ice for that burn.
Excellent. All right, so we found our element by name. There's a whole lot of these little helpers there to find it by name, by CSS selector, by all sorts of stuff. And then we're going to type SSW, and we're going to submit. Right. Now we need to find out what the links are. So we need to find the elements by CSS selector. Actually, there's elements by CSS selector. Now, I don't know off the top of my head what these look like. So I'm just going to open the favorite web developer's tool, which is Chrome, and go to Bing. I'm going to do this to find out how I can locate it. So search for SSW, and we can see... Oh, that's not good. We're not in the first three search results, Adam. You'll be pleased to know. Let me try...
Wrong search engine.
Oh, you know what? I'm using a VM in America, and it's very targeted. So I'm using Australia now, which means I'm going to have to change my test. There we go, first up. So, right-click, inspect element, and I can see here that we can look for a... Where are we? We can look for a class called SBMeta, and there's a site tag underneath that. So that's what I'll use. That's my CSS selector that I'll use. So it's SB_meta and site. Great. So that is, if you're familiar with jQuery, this will be really handy because it's the same selectors as the sizzle stuff that they use, or used to use, I suppose. All right, and I'm going to make sure this is bing.com.au, otherwise my test will fail. All right, so we've got these links. We need to now assert that is true. Oh, no, these false. Is true that the links, so any, using a bit of link here, and I'm also using ReSharper to make sure that I don't have to actually do any work. We're going to look and make sure that any link has the text of www.ssw.com.au, right? And finally, we're just going to close the browser. Now, I think that's less than 400 lines of code. All right, I'm going to run this. Hands up if you think this is going to run first go. Oh, ye of little faith. All right. So, right click, run tests. I'm going to open up my test explorer. It's just compiling for me. Oh, there we go. Oh, sorry, hands off. SSW searched. It's already finished. See that? Green tick. Yay! Come on, that deserves a cheer. All right, so look, a lot less than 400 lines of code, and we've actually got a decent test out of this. The great thing about Selenium is you can do things like this. If I want to run this test now in Firefox, I just have to change this to be Firefox driver, which doesn't need this external thing. Change it to Firefox, and now I'll run that test again. And that's the only line of code I needed to change. And it should not do that. It should. Oh, there we go. I didn't pray enough to the demo gods. I was mocking them. No, that's just not going to do it. So that is how you change your browser.
So you still need Lab Manager, don't you?
I still need Lab Manager. I'll try one more time. And then next time I'm sacrificing a goat before I start this. All right, come on.
Firefox must be slow.
So Firefox is slow. So I can use IE. Oh, there we go. Now we've got Firefox going to Bing, searching for SSW. It's a little bit slower than Chrome, but then it searches for that, and we have another green tick. So that's one line of code, one tiny bit of code that you change, and you can now test against the browser. You can go Firefox, IE, Safari. You can even do a bit of work and get it to point at an iPad or something like that as well.
I bet you can't do IE6 and IE10 together.
No, you can't. So the lab.
You still need Lab Manager.
Still need Lab Manager. That's correct.
One of the things I haven't tried, but I saw on BrowserStack, you can test it. You can actually point the web driver to BrowserStack and tell it what capabilities you want.
Ah. So the suggestion was pointing this at WebStack, is it? Or BrowserStack? Browser stack and telling it all the browsers you want and get it to do this. You could also make this a data-driven test as well and tell it to run in all of them, which is pretty handy. There's also some awesome stuff like browser.screenshot, get screenshot, and you can get it to save that screenshot to a file somewhere and it will sort that out for you. You can do some pixel perfect, you know, checking to make sure nobody's broken the CSS. But that's pretty cool, I think. I think it's pretty cool. So, that's what we did. We added a NuGet package, as suggested. We added the Selenium WebDriver bindings for .NET. And then we saw that we got a lot less lines of code, and this guy here can change to a different driver, and we get the same test in all these different browsers. So who thinks that this is better? I just want to see, who likes this over coded UI? Hands up. This instead of coded UI. It's about 80% of the room, I think.
They've changed their mind.
Yeah, so the comment was that the recordings don't always work so well with coded UI tests. And that was a little bit when we had that big red cross saying brittle. That's kind of what we mean. The default stuff, that big, the first chunk of code we saw, that was the code it uses to find the search box. Now, there's nothing wrong with the API. You can write that same test in coded UI with about the same lines of code that I just showed you in
Using
Selenium.
Marcel's method.
Using Marcel's method. So you can do that. It's a good API, but it is very IE-centric as well. I reckon if you start using Selenium, though, you'll start falling in love with WebDriver. It does some amazing things. You can change browser sizes and make sure CSS properties have disappeared and all sorts of stuff. So really good. It's concise and it's cross-browser are the biggest things for me. The only downside is you can't use this action recording that your tests give you. I've got a star on that because there is a plugin for Visual Studio 2012, I believe. I'm not sure about 2013. Called Selenium Components for Coded UI Cross-Browser Testing. It's a nice, concise title. But it lets you use an action recording, but drive that through WebDriver. So you can use that action recording, and then you can play that back in Chrome or Firefox or Safari or something like that as well. So that's worth a look as well.
So that works awesome. There's a couple of things that I'm hoping that Microsoft will do. That when you go into MTM and you make a test case and you run it and then you create the action recording, I would obviously like this to spit out WebDriver stuff. So, and if we had, you know, a beautiful 10 lines of Selenium, you know, I would be super excited. So I'm hoping that someone on the test team is listening. Anyway, so that's the cool stuff. There's more cool stuff to go through, but that is the really cool stuff. So it's basically time, you know, if you want to see, you can go to the party now, okay? It's not a big deal. Who's going to the party? Is it Dream World or Wet and Wild?
Movie World.
Movie World. Oh. They need a wet Dream World, don't they? So let's go through this. It's MTM, what's the problems? It's a kind of a large installation, Windows only. The UI could be better, you know, but it pretty much does what we want it to do. But I couldn't work out why Microsoft would keep ignoring all my requests to improve Test Manager. I wanted them to invest in a ribbon, you know. We got that storyboard tool and it came out in PowerPoint with a nice ribbon. Very easy to use straight away. You get this and you feel like you're in an ugly environment. So here is when things solidified. You can now do most stuff in 2013, or if you're using tfs.visualstudio.com, already in the browser. Most of what we've done now, you'll see a big move towards the browser. And this seems to be Microsoft's approach. So we can now go and open a test in the browser. They call it kind of the test hub. Its official name is Web Test Case Management. You can read what's in the test case, run the test case from the web, log a bug, and do all that type of stuff. So what I'm going to I might just quickly show that if I've got time. Yep.
You need the tester hat?
Yeah. Oh, thank you. All right. I'm a tester now. Modern tester. Close that. Am I on here? All right. So we don't need any of that stuff.
No.
Save that. All right. Get rid of all that. So what I want to show you when this thing closes down. Sorry, I should have closed that down before. Because it needs just 10 minutes to close down MTM. It's WPF. Oh, no, sorry, that's not the reason. Why did I save it? That was dumb. Anyway, while that's happening, I can go ahead. What I really want to show you was, see this test? See that star means it's in beta? Okay.
I don't know. Cheer.
What?
Can you use that?
I can use that. Well, I'm already on this. I'm sure it will come. As soon as I switch, it will work. So, all right, when should I switch?
Switch now.
All right, I'll switch. Right. Okay, so that's what happened. Oh, and that's working again. Great. All right. Oh, no, it's popped up with another screen. Anyway, that was my exploratory testing. At least I got to finish my other demo. All right, and pause and upload. No, cancel this. Don't. I just realized. Now I know what I was doing. Was it still recording all that time? And it was trying to upload that thing to the cloud. The good thing is, there is no charge for the cloud. So that big, fat thing that was uploading doesn't matter. You can actually probably put all your ISOs into... if you want cloud storage unlimited... No, you shouldn't do that. But you could. You could create work items. You could upload them all as attachments, like unlimited. There's nothing to stop you. Anyway, all right. So all I want to do was tell you, you click on this test hub here, and what you'll see that one? I've got my test cases here. Remember those test cases? That one's failed. You now see this, and I can click run. Now, which one did I create? Which one had the steps? Oh, here we go. Now, look at this. Does this look familiar? Does this look a bit like, you know, MTM, but in the browser? And now, unfortunately, it's not smart enough to do all the resizing. I have to do all that myself. But basically, if I want to read the acceptance criteria, what do? Click on here. Oh, well, that doesn't work. That's not very consistent. You'd have to read it first in this case. Never mind. But, you know, so then you go through and you open this thing and do whatever you're meant to do. Check that it's... Oh, I've opened the wrong one. Never mind. But you go through and you'll go tick, cross, tick. If that's not working, then you can say wrong. Okay? What you should be able to do... Now, what is not cool about this is if I want to take a screen capture... Do I have my Snagit tool? Where is it? There it is. I always use Snagit. So I want to just report this problem. See, the alignment here is wrong. I'm not very happy with this. Okay, so I can do all... See, this is much cooler than Paint. Anyway, I copy that thing. Unfortunately, here's where it sucks. I can't paste that image there. All right? That's very sad, isn't it? So there is still reasons to use it. But I'm going to tell you a secret, because nobody knows this little secret. So when I log a bug, very bad alignment. Get a load of this. I can put all my stuff here. Oh, gee. I'll get rid of all those steps to reproduce. That doesn't help developers. But I will... Look at that. Is that cool? No. Oh. All right, I'm not telling you any more tips. If you don't like that one... You know how I found out about that? When you go into tfs.visualstudio, this is a very good tip, visualstudio.com. When you look on news here, and when you're on 2012, you've got to think about whether I'm going to upgrade to, you know, the updates, or you might be making the decision right now. If you're on 2008, there was some guy in my session yesterday in 2005. He has to make the decision whether he's going to upgrade to 2012 or 2013. Should he wait a little bit? Yeah, I'm not sure he'd make that decision, but he would have to make that call. If you guys have to make that call, you can actually come onto here and scroll down and see when these things happen. And one of these, where was it? I saw it. Oh, sorry. Did I click on it? You click on Release Archive. And now you can see every feature that comes out. You know how they're pushing features out continually? See paste images. I can't believe Brian Harry didn't give me a call and tell me that because I've been asking for that like 10 years. Anyway, I got that there, and that's how I thought, no, you've got to be kidding. Anyway, it works. So, is that enough?
That's enough, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, good.
So, that's that demo done, and this is what I did. We went to the testing hub. It's brand new in 2012.2, so you'll need the update, or in 2013 it's got better. But, you can manage your test cases. 2013 has a lot more features than 2012.2 in terms of pasting images into web, editing test plans, etc. But you can still... There's one other thing. Can I just show them one more thing, Damo? I forgot
yes,
to show.
Yes, you can.
I would love to just show you this. So we did this run, but sometimes you'll still want to go to MTM. So you get this... this way, it gets the test runner. It will open up that specific thing. And now we get all the goodness of this action recording if you want to go down that route, which we just talked about. And that is a nice deep link, nice integration. And I think the best thing about all that is you can see the direction where Microsoft's heading and where all their investment is going. All right, so no MTM, potentially. All right, so we did this. You can do all this in the browser. Add test plans, add test suites, create tests. Run it in the browser or run it using MTM. All very, very, very cool. And then you come through. This is the only thing I don't really like about it. You pass, fail, add comments. The comments should support rich text and images. And then you come to the top to fail. It's a bit of a funny workflow, but that's how MTM works. All right, so then you click create a bug, and it should tell you, hey, you can paste images. What the hell is that, Damo?
So this is the one of the other advantages for people who have wrong laptops, that you can run this stuff in any environment. You don't have to install MTM on Windows. So this is MTM running in Safari, or TFS running in Safari in iOS.
All right, enough of that. All right. So, Verdi. Hey, who thought that stuff is cool? Super cool they'll use it. Okay, it's got 70. Who wouldn't use that and continue using MTM? Oh, I thought there would be more. Because I think in reality, your testers will, many of them will still revert back to MTM. But we got zero hands, interesting. Okay, so it runs in the browser, any browser, no need to install MTM. There's no recording unless you use Run as a client. So, let me just finish off now with stakeholder feedback. When you want to get a stakeholder to give you some feedback, how do you get them? They're not on the Scrum team, maybe they could be a product owner, but they're usually, you know, somebody else. How do you get them to give you feedback? Email, that's the common way, right? So email, or you can have a meeting, or you can have an over-the-shoulder meeting where he comes over and talks to you, et cetera, or share a link call or whatever, or a Skype call. Yama. What was that? Jabber. Yammer.
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 Seriously.
No, Yammer, I don't like Yammer at all. It's terrible. Oh, all right. Okay, you can keep using Yammer. All right. No. You know, Yammer is a very bad approach to do this. The better approach is to invite them to the Scrum meeting. Forget Yammer. All right. So you can do a recording with Jing or some other tool or Snagit and just send them. Or you can use this feedback tool. So let's demo this feedback tool. This feedback tool. All right. You want to...
So, yeah.
So who am I now?
You're no one right now. So I'm going to be a developer, right? So in... the web access, we get this lovely little link here called request feedback. Who is using this right now? Nearly no one. Right.
Is it who, no one or nearly?
I saw one hand. One person. All right. Who didn't know it was here? Yep.
Most.
Just a few people. Excellent. Well, now you know it's here. So when you click on that, you get this lovely dialogue, which I'll just go to. Let me just unpin that guy. You get this lovely dialogue that lets you fill in some details about how to get feedback from stakeholders. So I want to get feedback from Adam Cogan, who in this case is a fancy lawyer who works for us. So you can have the fancy lawyer hat. And I want him to... step two is telling him how to access the application to give me feedback, right? So we go to this URL, click on customers, and then we want to... ask him about showing more information. So, are we showing too much information? Do we need to remove the address? So this is something I'm worried about. Adam's not on our team, right? He's a lawyer. He's getting paid $1,000 an hour because it's past 2 p.m. or something. So he's...
And I bill my time in 6 minutes.
6 minute timing, so...
And if you argue with a lawyer, if you've ever argued with a lawyer, they actually charge you for the arguing.
Yep. So I want to make this focus thing really, really precise, actionable stuff. So when he comes back to me and says yes or no, I can turn that into some work that we can do straight away. So that's really important. I want to do that. All right. So I'm just going to zoom out again. So now I've got this information. I filled it all out. I'm going to click preview, and it shows me the email that I'm going to send to Adam. And it says here, here's what it looks like. Now, it says preview, but I can actually change this. So I could change any of the text in here, you know, change the wording if he doesn't quite understand this
stuff.
So they
make it grey, they call it preview, but they don't, and you can edit it. That's very logical.
Can you change the template?
Oh, good question.
Good question. Can you change the template? I don't know. No, would be my guess. Not in visualstudio.com, though.
I'm sure you could hack the database.
You might be able to hack the mainframe and... wait for the on-premise version of this, or have a play with the on-premise version. You might be able to there, but I'm not sure.
No, you can't.
All right, so we click send, and that goes away. So what that's doing is it's sending an email to my expensive lawyer, Adam Kogan, with something that he can action and give me some feedback on.
Right.
So, switch over to Adam.
To me.
To you. Fancy lawyer. So I want you to open your email, where you should have a new email.
Which email address?
Your SSW one, it will be.
That's very smart. Okay. Right, great. This is a very good idea. Open up my email in front of everyone. All right, take a chance. Well, I don't see any emails. What do I have to do?
It's still travelling through the non-NBM pipes, I think.
Okay. No. Did you send it really to this address?
I did.
Check your spam.
Check my spam.
Where? There we go.
Oh, great. All right, here's my email. Let me just fill that full screen in case somebody else sends me a dumb email. All right, so I click this. Are you... All right, so I'm the lawyer. We want your feedback. Are we showing too much information? Where? Start your feedback. You click that. And that... Great. That's not very smart. Oh, if you look in the bottom left, it actually... See, TFS and the exchange teams obviously don't talk, and I can't do the demo, don't I? Oh, actually, yes, I can. One second.
There you go.
Look at this. They've even anticipated this problem. So I'll just run that. I don't know how the lawyer would know. He'd be charging for his time to do this. So that's the experience. Now, launch, follow this, application, click that thing. All right, clicked. Instructions, click on customers. Yes? Where? Click on, where is it, on the right?
I should have given much better information and said it's over here.
If you had
right.
to put a screenshot in here, I would know what to do. Click next. Are we showing too much information? Do we need, yes, I don't want to put something. I don't want the address. How do I do this? One sec. Screenshot, there we go. Oops, that does not work. Screenshot, what did I do wrong then? There, and now, oh, look at that. I can put a screenshot, but I didn't want it all selected. Anyway, I'll just, oh, now I'm back in this dumb program. But I don't want address. So we go, okay, we save that. Oh, actually, I want to show you something cool. This tool, where is that screen? There we go. Click this, screen with voice. Now, it's actually recording. You wouldn't even know. It doesn't have the countdown. Hey, look, this address column sucks. Look at that. I don't want that. Now, how do I stop it? Yeah. And look, it puts this little screen recording. So a lawyer doesn't even have to use it. Actually, let me play it one second. Just to, I'll drop
click
you.
This, screen with voice. Now, it's actually recording. You wouldn't even know.
I'm not talking.
Hey, look.
Okay. So now the lawyer wouldn't know how to get rid of this, but you just... Now I'm here. How would I get back? Anyway, he'd be confused, but you know that you get the idea. So we go next. I rate it. I go that. Fine. Next. Submit and close. And he could have asked me more questions. And then it uploads, and that's the experience. Maybe better, maybe not.
This is what the dev sees, right? So I've got my feedback there. I'm just going to refresh. And we should see that little... tile there increased to 1, and I can see Adam's feedback here, response from Adam. Are we showing too much information? Open that guy up. I can see his horrible, horrible screenshot. What am I paying him all this money for? And a voice recording as well, which is great. So now I need to add this to my backlog. There's something he's given me feedback to remove that guy. There's a little icon up here. Create a copy of this work item, including links.
That means... add to backlog in TFS speak.
Right.
Why don't they just give you a button that says add to backlog? It's all you want.
So what that'll do, let me add a new work item. I'm going to make it a product backlog item because it's new functionality. I'm going to click OK. And we've got this product backlog item complete with the horrible screenshot. And even if we scroll down far enough, even this voice recording. So this rich information here. Which is pretty cool. We can just drag this onto our sprint and, well, drag it onto our backlog and then forget about it until sprint 12. Pretty cool, huh? Who would use this feedback tool now that you know about it? Yep. It's about
who would not use it, even though they've seen it? So just a couple. So we've got 95% of the room. I think, like, I have a bit of a hesitation with it because you have people like lawyers or the people that you ask, the subject matter experts, they're usually very busy people and they're used to doing it their own way. I think you'll find it a little bit harder than what you might imagine to get them to switch the way they work. Anyway, let's show them the last screens. This is what we went through. That would be the first time install. It actually takes about 30 seconds for that to happen. It's 30 megs. And you'll do all these screenshot stuff. And it's pretty cool. You add it to the backlog and you're done. So, all pretty cool. If that person is one of those power product owners, consider giving them MTM, where you get much richer ones. But this can be given to anyone. There's no cost for this. It's damn free. If you're using the cloud, you just need to give them, they just have to have a live ID, okay? Or if it's internally, you'll have to give them an AD account. That's about it. All right. So, you want to flick through this?
Yeah, I'll flick through this quickly. So, you might have seen a theme that it's not good enough to just test this in IE and your XP dev machine. So, lab management is a really good solution for this. So, in the past, you used to have to use complicated Hyper-V environments. There's infrastructure and hardware. There's maintenance costs, all that kind of stuff as well. So lab management now is very improved. There's two main features I want to point out. One is standard environments, which is new as of 2012. And the other one is Azure VMs. So standard environments means that rather than having to rely on Hyper-V environments controlled by SCVMM, and really, really difficult to manage and kill and restart and all that sort of stuff, you can now use a standard environment which lets you use any machine at all as a lab, which is really, really good news. The other one is Azure VMs. They recently changed the billing so that if your VM is turned off, you no longer get charged, which means you can have a VM sitting there for 30 or 40 different environments if you want to test them and only spin them up when you're running your tests. Very, very cost effective. Was that sorry? Storage. At the moment, so if you have a MSDN subscription, you might have seen this a few times, the storage of that information, they're not charging you anything for that. So it gives you a certain amount of money. This was in the keynote, I think, or in the...
I think it's 250.
Dev start off. Certain amount. It's either 100, 150, 200, 250, something depending on the level. But it's a lot more cost effective. We've been running all these demos off VMs and it's about $10 a month. So if you want to know more about load testing, go and see Anthony Borton's session later on. So in our lab center now, we have standard environments. In Azure, we have the ability to spin up virtual machines from the gallery. There's a lot of options there. You set up a controller for these VMs, and then when you all get all these green ticks, it's ready to go, and you can start sending stuff to that lab. You can create a build for your project from Visual Studio, use the lab template that they've given you, and go through a wizard to point at that lab. So now your tests and everything, your build will run, your tests will run on that lab. It's really, really powerful stuff. Who would use this? If you're not putting your hand up and it's because the infrastructure costs and all that sort of stuff, I encourage you to have another look, because these two changes make a big, big difference. It's really good for Windows apps where you have to test it across environments. And you can set up environments for any machine, you can test on those environments, your build definitions will run them automatically, and you can use Azure VMs really cost effectively.
So to recap, hopefully you have seen what agile testing is, the exploratory testing and the UI testing, the test stuff in the web, and even a way for stakeholders to give you feedback. Now, hopefully you can pick one of these up from down here if you want, but I hope that you will now go back, you will integrate some of these new features in, you will increase the maturity of your team, you'll aim for a way to work together, not throwing things over the wall, and you will then have your devs increasing their automation and the testers reducing the amount of manual tests. There are our contact emails and Twitter. Thank you very much, guys.